I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. An outstanding film screening this week at DOXA, the Documentary Film Festival, is the latest from the filmmaker Tasha Hubbard, Nipa Wistamasowin, We Will Stand Up. It opened the Hot Docs Festival in Toronto last week, and it documents the painful journey of the family of Colton Bushy, who in the summer of 2016 was shot to death by Gerald Stanley. The trial and acquittal of Stanley provoked outrage across the country and raised important questions about the judicial system in Canada. The film also looks at anti-Indigenous racism in Canada, focusing on the prairies where historically it resulted in violence against Indigenous people, and continues to define life, certainly, in the attitudes that were at the fore of how Bushy's death was reported, investigated, and prosecuted. That there was no remorse on the part of Stanley and apologists of his shooting is also looked at the movie. Dr. Hubbard, who joins me again, appears in the movie as a narrator and a teacher to her son and nephew, teaching them about their traditions, their place in society, and this necessary history. It's a very effective film and documents, too, the painful path for Colton's family through the trial and various meetings with powerful politicians in Saskatchewan, in Ottawa, and even at a meeting at the United Nations. Tasha Hubbard is a writer, filmmaker, and an associate professor at the University of Alberta. Her debut film project, Two Worlds Colliding, was critically acclaimed and won numerous awards. Her 2017 film, Birth of a Family, which she was previously on this program with, also premiered at Hot Docs and was an audience favorite. Nipa Wistamasowin, We Will Stand Up, is a National Film Board of Canada production and will screen Wednesday night, the 8th of May, at 6 p.m. at SFE Woodward's, and the next night, Thursday, the 9th of May, at noon at the Van City Theatre. Visit doxafestival.ca for tickets and information. At Tash Hubbard is her Twitter handle. It is a powerful film, moving and necessary in our time, as well as beautiful in many parts, especially in how it remembers Colton Bushy. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Tasha Hubbard. Dr. Hubbard, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Did you ever meet Colton Bushy?
No. No, I did not. My dad is married into his family, and I've spent some time on Red Pheasant and just going to visit, but I hadn't really gotten to know my dad's wife's extended family, so no, I never got the chance to meet him, sadly.
It's a very moving film. It's also a film that makes one angry in a couple of parts, but one part that I enjoyed is, and I think this is what Colton's family and friends would like, is that we're given the chance to get to know Colton. And I think that's the part that I enjoyed about the movie, if anything.
Yeah, because the narrative that got out there so quickly through, you know, as a result of the RCMP press release and as a result of the social media vitriol is, you know, that, you know, just he was, really, you know, almost like demonized, right?
Yeah.
In this narrative, and it was like, you know, and that's often the case with you know, when Indigenous people come into contact with the justice system, is people just feel free to say the most terrible things, and you know, I wanted to, you know, for my own self too, to, you know, who was this young man? And you know, that was the first thing somebody, you know, my stepmother said, you know, when we spoke, was, you know, he was such a kind young man. He was a helper, and he had that reputation in the community for that, you know, being that person who would come and help.
Yeah, he was incredibly intelligent and just remarkable. Wasn't he certified to be a firefighter at one point?
That's what he was working towards,
yeah.
And you know, he was the kind of young man who just wanted to be involved, and you know, his mom told me he was always, you know, going to the band office and seeing what the bulletins were of, different opportunities and coming home and saying, okay, let's go do this one. You know, like he had plans for himself, you know, he was thoughtful about, you know, the legacies of colonialism and the need to, you know, learn our language and, you know, our traditions. And yeah, he was a thinker.
It's a painful film to watch because, in a way, a lot of us know what's happened if we followed the case in the news. It's painful in the sense that when we see your film, there's some footage there of say some elders who are speaking after Gerald Stanley's arrest and before it goes to trial, and hearing them talk about having faith in the system. It really does break your heart when you realize what's happened at the end.
Well, I think that's what we're all told, right? And I think as Indigenous people, that's been the narrative told to us, is, okay, you know, trust the system, but when the system is set up in the way that it is, and, you know, is based on, at its core, you know, injustice against Indigenous people, you know, it's, yeah, you know, we hear that, and, you know, of course, we want to think that that's going to happen, that things are going to be fair, and things, you know, and so, yeah, it's still, even though I think we all sort of carry that sense of, like, I don't know how this is going to go, you know, you don't want to let go of that hope that,
yeah,
that we're, you know, people are going to be treated with respect, and that, you know, if there is people who hold bias, that will be exposed, and you know, but that wasn't the case here.
And that's the thing that I think those of us who are non-Indigenous need to realize, is that that feeling is something that Indigenous people feel from the get-go, and I think that's what your film portrays. I mean, even in the meetings that you accompany family members to, you know, these are meetings with the Prime Minister, you know, the United Nations in New York. There's a real challenge there that is very difficult to overcome, and I think we're looking for reconciliation to sort of take us there. But I mean, it is a very long road, isn't it?
It is, you know, and I think that you know, and I'm not the first to say it, but I think people have tried to jump into the R word without thinking about the truth, and the truth of the history, but also the truth of what's happening today. And, you know, that in, you know, many, many ways, the system has not differed for Indigenous people. You know, whatever you want to say, health is the health system, legal system, education. So how do you reconcile with something that is still ongoing?
And speaking about the truth, you near the beginning of the film, first third of the film, I think it is, you do talk about the history of the Indigenous experience on the prairies. And that's something that growing up here in Vancouver, I probably didn't think about until I saw your movie. And you do it in a very unique way. You use animation, and I found that incredibly effective.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to... You know, I thought about it very early on, was, you know, that I knew the main narrative was, of course, Colton's family and their search for justice for him. But, you know, I also was thinking about how this fit in, you know, a continuum of events, and that many people don't know that history. And so I actually, like, wrote those... And I imagined when I was saying it that I was actually teaching the boys and telling the boys that story. And I mean, it's something, you know, we do anyway. We do that for them and explain our history. But I, in that, you know, I wanted it to be like that, and that the audience is sort of invited in, mm-hmm. you know, to learn about this as well.
You mentioned the two boys, your son and your nephew. Is that right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's a beautiful scene. I guess you're at the RCMP archive, and mm-hmm. you're explaining what you're doing to them, and you're in tears. And the thing that I found so beautiful was your son, in just how he listens to you and how he looks at you. I don't know if you noticed that. With such attention, and then he notices the tear coming down your face, and he wants to do something, but he's got those archive gloves on that he can't.
they're both really caring mm-hmm. boys, you know, they really are, and you know, not just to their mothers, but you know, they're thinking about, you know, other kids and community, and you know, I think that in many ways, like we, you know, in Indigenous cultures, we realize that we learn from our children, you know, and I think in the Western ways of thinking, you know, we're here to teach our children, but I would say they teach me and as much as it goes the other way.
And it's great how you include your son in terms of, there's a scene near the end of the film where it's a conversation between you, him, and your grandfather. But there's another scene that I found compelling was where you have your son interview your birth father.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was fascinating because this is, I think, what I think serves us is... when you have that intergenerational dialogue, this conversation, mm-hmm. and I thought that was very effective in the movie as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, lots of things get passed on, right? And attitudes are among those. And there was an incident, I think, 2 days after Colt. Actually, I think it might have been the day of his funeral. My son and I and my nephew were traveling back to Saskatoon, and they stopped to play, and they end up making friends with these two non-Indigenous boys, and everything was great until their mother noticed, and she came over and pulled those boys away so fast. And I just thought, you know, this is where it starts, right? Mm. This is where it starts. Like they were interacting, and those boys were asking my boys questions about what it means to be Indigenous. Like there was just this really open exchange that just got interrupted, and you know, I do think that we have to think about what we're teaching our children in terms of how we view difference, how we view Indigenous people specifically.
You say in the movie that, and I think this is something we all take for granted, or we tend to forget, that it is hard not to internalize hate. And that's a lesson that I think you've been, I think this movie, I think, portrays, but this is something that you have an ongoing conversation with your son with, especially, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's something I've seen happen, and just want him to, you know, keep his sense of self intact. And you know, we're in tough times where, you know, the narrative is being fed, you know, by online hate and media, and you know, what parent doesn't want their child to grow up, you know, with their sense of self intact. And, you know, there's just another layer that needs to happen for Indigenous children.
Well, what's remarkable about your movie is you document from the time Gerald Stanley shoots Colton through to his arrest, the trial, and then the aftermath of the trial, which you know, it's still ongoing. There are a couple of things I just want to bring up that I thought were that I guess I forgot along the way. After Colton's death, and I guess they have to inform the next of kin, the RCMP shows up at Colton's mother's house. And, I mean, it's just shocking to find out what happened there. I mean, it really, really does anger the viewer. And so they swarm the place, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is shocking. And I think that, you know, I think the family lawyer, Chris Murphy, really stated it well when he spoke about, you know, if something ever happened to him, that, you know, he was absolutely 100% confident that his family would not be informed in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were justifications made by the RCMP, and that's kind of an ongoing thing right now, but, you know, that they say they were looking for the other witness, but, you know, that doesn't, regardless of that, you know, that doesn't excuse the attitude they showed towards a grieving mother.
Yeah, there was no need to check for breath, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. Or to be yelling, you know, get yourself together. I mean, like, you know, in the worst moment of her life, right?
Right.
That's just not necessary.
After the verdict, there was talk in the media, a great deal of talk in the media, and this was brought to the national stage by the politicians with regards to jury, the jury selection. I guess it's called preemptive challenges. There's a scene in the film where I guess the then justice minister is confronted about preemptive challenges after a meeting with Colton's family. Did anything come about from that?
Yeah, there was a bill. There is a bill. I'm not entirely sure where it is. It's making its way through to remove those. Bill C-75.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, it's something that caught people's attention, was the way in which those can be used. And, you know, I think, you know, we were sitting, we couldn't film inside the jury selection, but my producer and I witnessed it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these there were five Indigenous people willing to serve. And the defense, just one by one, took them out and even took out people of color, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's... And I think that there's different spaces of the country it can be used. They can be used in different ways, but, you know, definitely in the prairies, it can work in the way it did. And, you know, it was very disheartening for the family. And
yeah.
Jade was the person who elected to go and watch on behalf of the family. And you know, you see Debbie's reaction when she finds out.
Yeah, and you sought one of those jurors, and you talked to him, did you not?
Yeah, you know, I after, it was actually in Ottawa, we were all sitting together at the last night we were there and talking, and we were talking about that case, and I just thought, I wonder how they feel, wonder how they felt, and just put a call out on my Facebook, and many people had described that young man, the lawyer, Jade, others who were sitting there, and he had made an impression, and so I thought, well, maybe I'll try and find him, and just described him on my Facebook, and said, if anyone knows who he is, then I'd like to talk to him, and within an hour, somebody had messaged, and said, I think I know who you're looking for, and I started talking to him, and he agreed to be in the film.
What angers me, and doubtless anger people who watch the film, which they can do at Doxa here in Vancouver shortly, is the fact that there was no remorse on the part of the Stanleys. We see, and this is footage that you shot after the verdict, people driving their trucks in the parking lot, revving the engines and the sort, and you being filmed by them as you were filming them. Was some people might ask you this. Did you want to, say, talk to someone from that family, perhaps, or their lawyer, maybe?
You know, I think that when you look at documentaries in general, you know, and we have such a long tradition of documentaries in Canada, there are so few that are made, you know, when looking at Indigenous topics, made by Indigenous filmmakers and Indigenous perspectives, and having Indigenous families being able to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really my interest from the beginning, was, you know, making space for this family to be heard about what their experience was. And, you know, that was always my focus.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I was thinking about as I was watching the movie is how the media covered this. I mean, this comes into focus as I'm watching the film. We spoke earlier about the narratives that came about with regards mm-hmm. to who Colton was. Was that something that you wanted to look into a little bit more, perhaps, about how the media portrayed Colton? And
yeah, you know, that was actually something I thought about incorporating in the historical animation pieces. But mm-hmm. in the end, I mean, we had to write and rewrite to really try and keep those where they gave the overview. But, I mean, I realized we couldn't stay there for 10 minutes, you know, and we had to.
Right.
So the one thing that, you know, I think about sometimes, you know, filmmakers are like, what's the one thing you couldn't get into? And that's one of it, was, you know, there's been some really strong academic work done on analyzing the media response to 1885, and that mainstream publications were, you know, savage, violent Indians, you know, and they really set the tone. And I don't think we can underestimate, you know, the effects of that and how those ideas linger. And, you know, I hope journalists really think about, you know, their word choices. And it's of course much more subtle, you know, uh-huh. for the most part, in what's said. But, you know, I think that, you know, people's unconscious bias.
Sure, yeah.
This is where, it's cases like this where that comes out. And, you know, I think that, you know, there were exceptions, you know. There were journalists who really worked hard to try and bring the family into the narrative and were critiqued. You know, that was what was so interesting to watch, was some of the social media comments about, like, angry with uh-huh. the outlet who dared to speak to the family of the victim. And it was like, well, how can their voices not be a part of this, you know? But it's that presumption, I think, that, yeah, Indigenous people's voices just aren't heard, and when they are, it takes people aback.
What as a filmmaker, you take us to very high-level meetings with politicians. I mentioned the meeting with the Prime Minister. We're in there for part of that. You traveled mm-hmm. to New York with the United Nations. There's a meeting with the Premier of Saskatchewan as well, and others. What was that like to be in the room? Was there a lot of negotiation, say, ahead of time to get your cameras in there, say?
It's not as much as you'd think. So much was happening in the moment. I mean, we, you know, I thought the film was going to be done, like, after the verdict, like
uh-huh.
I assumed, you know, at the least it would be manslaughter, as many, many people did,
mm-hmm.
right? Like
yeah.
that was, you know, that was the media's opinion, you know, that's what we were overhearing in conversations, like,
right.
you know. So when it didn't happen that way, I mean, we were also, you know, not prepared, to be honest. And so when the story just, it was just literally unfolding minute
mm-hmm.
to minute, and you know, my producers and I were just like scrambling to keep up and to be there with them. And so, yeah, you know, obviously people agree and there's conversations, but some of those are happening really quickly, including Ottawa, you know, and I think we were confirming like Monday night that we would be allowed to be in summer, you know, I Prime Minister and Cabinet Minister Goodale and
right.
Minister Wilson Raybould had said we could be in for the beginning and then would have to leave partway through. But that was it. Everyone else let us film everything.
Really? Yeah.
And it was being noticed, the level of access we had. But I think people understood how important the story was, and we were given pretty full access, including the UN. I mean, we had to do some work ahead of time for
right,
that one.
Right.
But also, once we got there, you know, the head of media relations heard we were there, and we met with him, and he personally walked us around so we could get the footage we needed. And we got a lot of support.
It's a beautiful film as well, because we get to know Colton's mom, his brother, his family, his cousins, and the sword, and we get to really know him, and I so appreciate your time today to talk about this movie. It's a beautiful film, and for a lot of people who watch it, we'll simply never forget Colton Bushy.
Well, thank you. I know his family want him to be remembered for who he was, and you know, for his legacy to result in change for our children. So thank you.
Visit doxafestival.ca for tickets and information. At Tash Hubbard is her Twitter handle. Incidentally, other than the screenings on the 8th and 9th of May, there is at least one additional screening. Visit doxafestival.ca for more information on that. Tasha Hubbard joined me on the line from Edmonton in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.